the 22nd of February. Up and to the office, where I a while, and then home with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley to give him some tallies upon the business of the mole at Tangier, and then out with him by coach to the excise office, there to enter them, and so back again with him to the exchange, and there I took another coach, and home to the office and to my business till dinner, the rest of our officers having been this morning upon the victuallers' accounts. At dinner all of us, that is to say, Lord Brunker, John Minnis, William Batten, Thomas Harvey and myself, to Sir William Penn's house to dinner, where some other company. It is instead of a wedding dinner for his daughter, whom I saw in paltry clothes, nothing new but a bracelet that her servant hath given her, and ugly she is as heart can wish. A sorry dinner, not anything handsome nor clean, but some silver plates they borrowed of me. My wife was here too, so a great deal of talk, and I seemingly merry, but took no pleasure at all. We had favours given us all, and we put them in our hats, I against my will, but that my lord and the rest did. I being displeased that he did carry Sir William Coventry's himself several days ago, and the people up and down the town long since, and we must have them but today. After dinner to talk a little, and then I away to my office to draw up a letter of the state of the office and navy for the Duke of York against Sunday next, and at it late, and then home to supper and to bed, talking with my wife of the poorness and meanness of all that Sir William Penn and the people about us do, compared with what we do. The 23rd of February. This day I am, by the blessing of God, 34 years old, in very good health, and mind's content, and in condition of estate, much beyond whatever my friends could expect of a child of theirs this day 34 year. The Lord's name be praised, and may I be ever thankful for it. Up betimes to the office in order to my letter to the Duke of York tomorrow, and then the office met and spent the greatest part about this letter. At noon, home to dinner, and then to the office again, very close at it all the day till midnight, making an end and writing fair this great letter and other things to my full content, it abundantly providing for the vindication of this office, whatever the success be of our wants of money. This evening Sir William Batten came to me to the office on purpose, out of spleen, of which he is full to carcass, to tell me that he is now informed of many double tickets now found of carcasses making, which quite overthrew him. It is strange to see how, though I do believe this fellow to be a rogue, and could be contented to have him removed, yet to see him persecuted by Sir William Batten, who is as bad himself, and that with so much rancour, I am almost the fellow's friend. But this good I shall have from it, that the differences between William Batten and my Lord Brunker will do me no hurt. The 24th of February, Lord's Day. Up and with William Batten by coach, he set me down at my Lord Brunker's, his feud there not suffering him to light himself, and I, with my Lord, by and by, when ready, to Whitehall. And by and by up to the Duke of York, and there presented our great letter and other papers, and among the rest my report of the victualling, which is good, I think, and will continue my pretence to the place, which I am still afeard Sir William Coventry's employment may extinguish. We have discharged ourselves in this letter fully from blame in the bad success of the navy, if money do not come soon to us, and so my heart is at pretty good rest in this point. Having done here, Sir William Batten and I home by coach, and though the sermon at our church was begun, yet he would light and go home, and ate a slice of roast beef off of the spit, and did, and then he and I to church in the middle of the sermon. My Lady Penn there saluted me with great content, to tell me that her daughter and husband are still in bed, as if the silly woman thought it a great matter of honour, and did, going out of the church, ask me whether we did not make a great show at court today with all our favours in our hats. After sermon, home, and alone with my wife dined. Among other things, my wife told me how ill a report our mercer hath got, by her keeping of company, so that she will not send for her to dine with us or be with us as heretofore, and, which is more strange, tells me that little Miss Tooker hath got a clap, as young as she is, being brought up loosely by her mother, having been in bed with her mother when her mother have had a man come into bed and lay with her. In the afternoon, away to Whitehall by water, and took a turn or two in the park, and then back to Whitehall, and there, meeting my Lord Arlington, he, by I know not what kindness, offered to carry me along with him to my Lord Treasurer's, whither I told him I was going. I believe he had a mind to discourse of some navy businesses, but Sir Thomas Clifford coming into the coach to us, we were prevented, which I was sorry for I had a mind to begin an acquaintance with him. He speaks well and hath pretty slight superficial parts, I believe. He in our going talked much of the plain habit of the Spaniards, how the king and lords themselves wear but a cloak of Colchester baize, and the ladies' mantles, in cold weather, of white flannel. And that the endeavours frequently of setting up the manufacture of making these stuffs there have only been prevented by the Inquisition, the English and Dutchmen that have been sent for to work being taken with a psalm book or testament, and so clapped up and the house pulled down by the inquisitors, and the greatest lord in Spain dare not say a word against it, if the word Inquisition but be mentioned. At my Lord Treasurer's light, and parted with them, they going into council, and I walked with Captain Cock, who takes mighty notice of the differences growing in our office between Lord Brunker and William Batten, and among others also. And I fear it may do us hurt, but I will keep out of them. By and by comes Sir Stephen Fox, and he and I walked and talked together on many things, but chiefly want of money and the straits the king brings himself and affairs into for want of it. Captain Cock did tell me, which I must not forget, that the answer of the Dutch, refusing the Hague for a place of treaty, and proposing the Boise, Breda, Bergen op Zoom, or Maastricht, was seemingly stopped by the Swedes' ambassador, though he did show it to the king, but the king would take no notice of it, nor does not, from being delivered to the king, and he hath wrote to desire them to consider better of it. So that though we know their refusal of the place, yet they know not that we know it, nor the king obliged to show his sense of the affront. That the Dutch are in very great straits, so as to be said to be not able to set out their fleet this year. By and by comes Sir Robert Viner and Lord Mayor to ask the king's direction about measuring out the streets according to the new act for building of the city, wherein the king is to be pleased. But he says that the way proposed in Parliament by Colonel Birch would have been the best, to have chosen some persons in trust and sold the whole ground, and let it be sold again by them with preference to the old owner, which would have certainly caused the city to be built where these trustees pleased, whereas now great differences will be, and the streets built by fits, and not entire till all differences be decided. This, as he tells it, I think would have been the best way. I inquired about the Frenchman that was said to fire the city, and was hanged for it by his own confession that he was hired for it by a Frenchman of Rouen, and that he did with a stick reach in a fireball in at a window of the house, whereas the master of the house, who is the king's baker, and his son and daughter do all swear there was no such window, and that the fire did not begin thereabouts. Yet the fellow, who though a mopish, besotted fellow, did not speak like a madman, did swear that he did fire it, and did not this like a madman, for being tried on purpose and landed with his keeper at the Tower Wharf, he could carry the keeper to the very house. Asking Sir Robert Viner what he thought was the cause of the fire, he tells me that the baker, son, and his daughter did all swear again and again that their oven was drawn by 10 o'clock at night. That having occasion to light a candle about 12, there was not so much fire in the bakehouse as to light a match for a candle, so as they were fain to go into another place to light it, that about 2 in the morning they felt themselves almost choked with smoke, and rising, did find the fire coming upstairs, so they rose to save themselves. But that at that time the Bavins were not on fire in the yard, so that they are, as they swear, in absolute ignorance how this fire should come, which is a strange thing that so horrid an effect should have so mean and uncertain a beginning. By and by called into the king and cabinet, and there had a few insipid words about money for Tangier, but to no purpose. Thence away, walked to my boat at Whitehall, and so home and to supper, and then to talk with Will Hewer about business of the differences at present among the people of our office, and so to my journal and to bed. This night, going through bridge by water, my waterman told me how the mistress of the Bear Tavern at the bridge foot did lately fling herself into the Thames and drowned herself, which did trouble me the more when they tell me it was she that did live at the White Horse Tavern in Lombard Street, which was a most beautiful woman as most I have seen. It seems hath had long melancholy upon her, and hath endeavoured to make away with herself often. The 25th of February. Lay long in bed, talking with pleasure with my poor wife, how she used to make coal fires and wash my foul clothes with her own hand for me, poor wretch, in our little room at my Lord Sandwich's, for which I ought for ever to love and admire her, and do, and persuade myself she would do the same thing again, if God should reduce us to it. So up, and by coach abroad to the Duke of Albemarle's about sending soldiers down to some ships, and so home, calling at a belt-maker's to mend my belt, and so home and to dinner, where pleasant with my wife, and then to the office, where mighty busy all the day, saving going forth to the change to pay for some things and on other occasions. And at my goldsmith's did observe the King's new medal, where in little there is Mistress Stuart's face, as well done as ever I saw anything in my whole life, I think. And a pretty thing it is that he should choose her face to represent Britannia by. So at the office late, very busy, and much business with great joy dispatched. And so home, to supper and to bed. The 26th of February. Up and to the office, where all the morning, and here did receive another reference from Sir William Coventry about the business of some of the muster masters, concerning whom I had returned their small performances, which doth give me a little more trouble, for fear William Coventry should think that I had a design to favour my brother Balty, and to that end to disparage all the rest, but I shall clear all very well. Only it doth exercise my thoughts more than I am at leisure for. At home find Balty and his wife very fine, which I did not like, for fear he doth spend too much of his money that way, and not lay up anything. After dinner to the office again, where by and by Lord Brunker, William Batten, John Minnis and I met about receiving Carcass's answers to the depositions against him, wherein I did see so much favour from my lord to him, that I do again begin to see that my lord is not right at the bottom, and did make me the more earnest against him, though said little. But my lord, rising, declaring his judgment in his behalf, and going away, I did hinder our arguing it by ourselves, and so broke up the meeting, and myself went full of trouble to my office, there to write over the deposition, and his answers side by side, and then home to supper and to bed. With some trouble of mind to think of the issue of this, how it will breed ill blood among us here. The 27th of February. Up by candlelight about 6 o'clock, it being bitter cold weather again, after all our warm weather, and by water down to Woolwich Rope Yard, I being this day at a leisure, the King and Duke of York being gone down to Sheerness this morning to lay out the design for a fortification there to the River Medway. And so we do not attend the Duke of York as we should otherwise have done. And then to the dockyard to inquire of the state of things, and went into Mr. Pett's, and there, beyond expectation, he did present me with a Japan cane with a silver head, and his wife sent me by him a ring from a Woolwich stone, now much in request, which I accepted, the value not being great, and knowing that I had done them courtesies, which he did own in very high terms. And then, at my asking, did give me an old draught of an ancient-built ship, given him by his father, of the Bear, in Queen Elizabeth's time. This did much please me, it being a thing I much desired to have, to show the difference in the built of ships now, and heretofore. Being much taken with this kindness, away to Blackwall and Deptford to satisfy myself there about the King's business, and then walk to Redriff, and so home about noon, There find Mr. Hunt, newly come out of the country, who tells me the country is much impoverished by the greatness of taxes. The farmers do break every day almost, and £1,000 a year becomes not worth £500. He dined with us, and we had a good discourse of the general ill state of things. And by the way, he told me some ridiculous pieces of thrift of Sir George Downing's, who is their countryman, in inviting some poor people at Christmas last to charm the country people's mouths, but did give them nothing but beef porridge, pudding and pork, and nothing said all dinner, but only his mother would say, "It's good broth, son." He would answer, "Yes, it is good broth." Then his lady confirm all and say, "Yes, very good broth." By and by he would begin and say, "Good pork." "Yes," says the mother, "good pork." Then he cries, "Yes, very good pork." And so they said of all things, to which nobody made any answer, they going there not out of love or esteem of them, but to eat his victuals, knowing him to be a niggardly fellow. And with this he is jeered now all over the country. This day, just before dinner, comes Captain Story of Cambridge to me to the office, about a bill for pressed money for men sent out of the country, and the countries about him, to the fleet the last year. But, Lord, to see the natures of men! How this man, hearing my name, did ask me of my country, and told me of my cousin Roger that he was not so wise a man as his father, for that he doth not agree in Parliament with his fellow burgesses and knights of the shire, whereas I know very well the reason, for he is not so high a flyer as Mr. Chichley and others, but loves the king better than any of them, and to better purpose. But yet he says that he is a very honest gentleman, and thence run into 100 stories of his own services to the king, and how he at this day brings in the taxes before anybody here thinks they are collected, discourse very absurd to entertain a stranger with. He being gone, and I glad of it, I home and then to dinner. After dinner with my wife by coach abroad, and set Mr. Hunt down at the Temple and her at her brother's, and I to Whitehall to meet William Coventry, but found him not, but met Mr. Cooling, who tells me of my Lord Duke of Buckingham's being sent for last night by a sergeant-at-arms to the Tower for treasonable practices, and that the King is infinitely angry with him, and declared him no longer one of his council. I know not the reason of it or occasion. To Westminster Hall, and there paid what I owed for books, and so by coach took up my wife to the Exchange, and there bought things for Mr. Pierce's little daughter, my Valentine, and so to their house, where we find Nip, who also challengeth me for her Valentine. She looks well, sang well, and very merry we were for half an hour. Tells me Harris is well again, having been very ill, and so we home and I to the office, then at night to Sir William Penn, and sat with my lady and the young couple, the husband, Sir William, out of town, talking merrily. But they made a very sorry couple, methinks, though rich. So, late home, and to bed. The 28th of February. Up, and there comes to me Drumbleby with a flageolet made to suit with my former, and brings me one greeting, a master to teach my wife. I agree by the whole with him to teach her to take out any lesson of herself for £4. She was not ready to begin today, but doth tomorrow. So I to the office, where my Lord Brunker and I only, all the morning, and did business. At noon to the Exchange, and to Sir Robert Viner's about settling my accounts there. So back home, and to dinner, where Mr. Holyard dined with us, and pleasant company he is. I love his company, and he secures me against ever having the stone again. He gives it me as his opinion that the city will never be built again together, as is expected, while any restraint is laid upon them. He hath been a great loser, and would be a builder again, but he says he knows not what restrictions there will be, so as it is unsafe for him to begin. He gone, I to the office, and there busy till night, doing much business. Then home and to my accounts, wherein, beyond expectation, I succeeded so well as to settle them very clear and plain, though by borrowing of monies this month to pay Dennis Gordon, and chopping and changing with my Tangier money, they were become somewhat intricate. And blessed be God, Upon the evening my accounts, I do appear £6,800 creditor. This done, I to supper about 12 at night, and so to bed. The weather for 3 or 4 days being come to be exceeding cold again, as any time this year. I did, within these 6 days, see smoke still remaining of the late fire in the city, and it is strange to think how to this very day I cannot sleep a night without great terrors of fire, and this very night could not sleep till almost 2 in the morning through thoughts of fire. Thus this month is ended with great content of mind to me, thriving in my estate, and my matters in my offices going pretty well as to myself. This afternoon Mr. Gordon was with me, and tells me more than I knew before, that he hath orders to get all the victuals he can to Plymouth and the western ports, and other outports, and some to Scotland, so that we do intend to keep but a flying fleet this year, which it may be may preserve us a year longer, but the end of it must be ruin. Sir John Minnis this night tells me that he hears for certain that ballads are made of us in Holland for begging of a peace, which I expected but am vexed at. So ends this month with nothing of weight upon my mind but for my father and mother, who are both ill and have been so for some weeks, whom God help, but I do fear my poor father will hardly be ever thoroughly well again. March 1667. The first. Up, it being very cold weather again after a good deal of warm summer weather, and to the office, where I settled to do much business today. By and by sent for to Sir George Carteret, to discourse of the business of the navy and our wants, and the best way of bestowing the little money we have, which is about £30,000. But God knows we have need of 10 times as much, which doth make my life uncomfortable, I confess, on the king's behalf, though it is well enough as to my own particular. But the king's service is undone by it. Having done with him, back again to the office, and in the street in Mark Lane to observe, it being St. David's Day, the picture of a man dressed like a Welshman, hanging by the neck upon one of the poles that stand out at the top of the merchants' houses, in full proportion and very handsomely done, which is one of the oddest sights I have seen a good while, for it was so like a man that one would have thought it was indeed a man. Being returned home, I find greeting the flageolet master come and teaching my wife, and I do think my wife will take pleasure in it, and it will be easy for her and pleasant. So I, as I am well contented with the charge it will occasion me. So to the office till dinner, busy, and then home to dinner, and before dinner making my wife to sing, poor wretch. Her ear is so bad that it made me angry, till the poor wretch cried to see me so vexed at her, that I think I shall not discourage her so much again, but will endeavour to make her understand sounds, and do her good that way. For she hath a great mind to learn, only to please me, and therefore I am mighty unjust to her in discouraging her so much. But we were good friends, and to dinner, and had she not been ill with those, and that it were not Friday, on which in Lent there are no plays, I had carried her to a play, but she not being fit to go abroad, I to the office, where all the afternoon close, examining the collection of my papers of the accounts of the navy since this war, to my great content. And so, at night, home to talk and sing with my wife, and then to supper, and so to bed with great pleasure. But I cannot but remember that just before dinner, one of my people came up to me, and told me a man come from Huntingdon would speak with me. How my heart came into my mouth, doubting that my father, who hath long been sick, was dead. It put me into a trembling, but blessed be it was no such thing, but a countryman come about ordinary business to me, to receive £50 paid to my father in the country for the Perkinses, for their legacy, upon the death of their mother, by my uncle's will. So though I get nothing at present, at least by that estate I am fain to pay this money, rather than rob my father, and much good it may do them that I may have no further trouble from them. I hear today that Tom Woodall, the known chirurgeon, is killed at Somerset House by a Frenchman, but the occasion Sir William Batten could not tell me. The 2nd of March. up into the office where sitting all the morning, and among other things did agree upon a distribution of £30,000 and odd, which is the only sum we hear of like to come out of all the poll bill for the use of this office for buying of goods. I did herein some few courtesies for particular friends I wished well to, and for the king's services also, and was therefore well pleased with what was done. Sir William Penn this day did bring an order from the Duke of York for our receiving from him a small vessel for a fireship, and taking away a better of the king's for it, it being expressed for his great service to the king. This I am glad of, not for his sake, but that it will give me a better ground, I believe, to ask something for myself of this kind, which I was fearful to begin. This doth make Sir William Penn the most fond to me that can be. I suppose it is this, lest it should find any opposition from me, but I will not oppose, but promote it. After dinner, with my wife to the king's house, to see The Maiden Queen, a new play of Dryden's, mightily commended for the regularity of it, and the strain and wit. And the truth is, there is a comical part done by Nell, which is Florimel, that I never can hope ever to see the like done again by man or woman. The King and Duke of York was at the play, but so great performance of a comical part was never, I believe, in the world, before as Nell doth this, both as a mad girl, and then, most and best of all, when she comes in like a young gallant, and hath the motions and carriage of a spark, the most that ever I saw any man have. It makes me, I confess, admire her. Thence home and to the office, where busy a while, and then home to read the lives of Henry the Fifth and Sixth, very fine, in speed, and so to bed. This day I did pay a bill of £50 from my father, it being so much out of my own purse, given to pay my Uncle Robert's legacy to my Aunt Perkins's child. The 3rd of March. Lay long, merrily talking with my wife, and then up and to church, where a dull sermon of Mr. Mills, touching original sin, and then home, and there find little Mitchell and his wife, whom I love mightily. Mightily contented I was in their company, for I love her much. And so, after dinner, I left them, and by water from the Old Swan to Whitehall, where, walking in the galleries, I in the first place met Mr. Pierce, who tells me the story of the death of Tom Woodle, the surgeon, killed in a drunken quarrel, and how the Duke of York hath a mind to get him one of his places in St. Thomas's Hospital. Then comes Mr. Haywood, the Duke of York's servant, to us, and tells us that the Swedes' ambassador hath been here today with news, and that it is believed that the Dutch will yield to have the treaty at London or Dover, neither of which will get our king any credit, we having already consented to have it at The Hague, which it seems De Witt opposed as a thing wherein the King of England must needs have some profound design, which in my conscience he hath not. They do also tell me that news is this day come to the king, that the King of France is come with his army to the frontiers of Flanders, demanding leave to pass through their country towards Poland, but is denied, and thereupon that he is gone into the country. How true this is, I dare not believe till I hear more. From them I walked into the park, it being a fine but very cold day, and there took two or three turns the length of the Pall Mall, and there I met Sergeant Barcroft, who was sent for the Duke of Buckingham to have brought him prisoner to the Tower. He came to town this day and brings word that being overtaken and outrid by the Duchess of Buckingham, within a few miles of the Duke's house of Westhorpe, he believes, she got thither about a quarter of an hour before him, and so had time to consider, so that when he came, the doors were kept shut against him. The next day, coming with officers of the neighbour market town, to force open the doors, they were open for him, but the Duke of Buckingham gone. So he took horse presently, and heard upon the road that the Duke of Buckingham was gone before him for London, so that he believes he is this day also come to town before him, but no news is yet heard of him. This is all he brings. Thence to my Lord Chancellor, and there, meeting Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, he and I walked in my Lord's garden and talked, among other things, of the treaty, and he says there will certainly be a peace, but I cannot believe it. He tells me that the Duke of Buckingham's crimes, as far as he knows, is his being of a cabal with some discontented persons of the late House of Commons, and opposing the desires of the King in all his matters in the House, and endeavouring to become popular, and advising how the Commons House should proceed, and how he would order the House of Lords, and that he hath been endeavouring to have the King's nativity calculated, which was done, and the fellow now in the Tower about it, which itself hath heretofore, as he says, been held treason, and people died for it. But by the statute of treasons in Queen Mary's times and since, it hath been left out. He tells me that this silly lord hath provoked by his ill carriage the Duke of York, my Lord Chancellor, and all the great persons, and therefore most likely will die. He tells me, too, many practices of treachery against this king, as betraying him in Scotland, and giving Oliver an account of the king's private counsels, which the king knows very well, and yet hath pardoned him. Here I passed away a little time more, talking with him and Creed, whom I met there, and so away, Creed walking with me to Whitehall, and there I took water, and staying at Mitchell's to drink, I home, and there to read very good things in Fuller's Church History and Worthies, and so to supper, and after supper had much good discourse with Will Hewers, who supped with us about the ticket office, and the knaveries and extortions every day used there, and particularly of the business of Mr. Carcass, whom I fear I shall find a very rogue. So parted with him, and then to bed. The 4th of March. Up and with Sir John Minnis and William Batten by barge to Deptford by 8 in the morning, where to the King's Yard a little to look after business there, and there to a private storehouse to look upon some cordage of Sir William Batten's. And there being a hole formerly made for a drain for tar to run into, wherein the barrel stood still full of stinking water, Sir William Batten did fall with one leg into it, which might have been very bad to him, by breaking a leg or other hurt. But thanks be to God he only sprained his foot a little. So after his shifting his stocking at a strong water shop close by, we took barge again, and so to Woolwich, where our business was chiefly to look upon the ballast wharf there, which is offered us for the king's use to hire. But we do not think it worth the laying out much money upon, unless we could buy the fee simple of it, which cannot be sold us, so we wholly flung it off. So to the dockyard, and there stayed a while, talking about business of the yard, and thence to the rope yard, and so to the White Hart, and there dined, and Captain Cock with us, who we find at the rope yard, and very merry at dinner, and many pretty tales of Sir John Minnis, which I have entered in my tale book. But by this time Sir William Batten was come to be in much pain in his foot, so as he was forced to be carried down in a chair to the barge again, and so away to Deptford, and there I a little in the yard, and then to Bagwell's, where I find his wife washing, and I did hacer todo que yo voudrais con her, and then sent for her husband and discoursed of his going to Harwich this week to his charge of the new shipbuilding there, which I have got him. And so away, walked to Redriff, and there took boat and away home upon Tower Hill near the ticket office, meeting with my old acquaintance Mr. Chaplin, the cheesemonger, and there failed to talk of news, and he tells me that for certain the King of France is denied passage with his army through Flanders, and that he hears that the Dutch do stand upon high terms with us, and will have a promise of not being obliged to strike the flag to us before they will treat with us, and other high things which I am ashamed of and do hope will never be yielded to, that they do make all imaginable preparations, but that he believes they will be in mighty want of men, that the King of France doth court us mightily. He tells me, too, that our Lord Treasurer is going to lay down, and that my Lord Arlington is to be Lord Treasurer. But I believe nothing of it, for he is not yet of an estate visible enough to have that charge, I suppose, upon him. So, being parted from him, I home to the office, and after having done business there, I home to supper, and there mightily pleased with my wife's beginning on the flageolet, believing that she will come to play very well thereon. So to bed. This day in the barge I took Birchenshaw's translation of Altstedt, his Templum, but the most ridiculous book, as he hath translated it, that ever I saw in my life, I declaring that I understood not three lines together from one end of the book to the other. The 5th of March. Up into the office where met and sat all the morning, doing little for want of money, but only bear the countenance of an office. At noon, home to dinner, and then to the office again, and there comes Martin, my purser, and I walked with him a while in the garden, I giving him good advice to beware of coming any more with high demands for supernumeraries or other things. For now Sir William Penn is come to mind that business, the passing of his accounts will not be so easy as the last. He tells me he will never need it again, it being as easy and to as much purpose to do the same thing otherwise, and how he doth keep his captain's table, and by that means hath the command of his captains, and doth not fear, in a fifth-rate ship constantly employed, to get £1,000 in 5 years' time. And this year, besides all his spendings, which are, I fear, high, he hath got at this day clear above £150 in a voyage of about 5 or 6 months, which is a brave trade. He gone, I to the office, and there all the afternoon late, doing much business, and then to see Sir William Batten, whose leg is ill, but better than it was, and like to do well. I, by discourse, do perceive he and his lady are to their hearts out with my Lord Brunker and Mistress Williams, to which I added something, but I think did not venture too far with them. But, Lord, to see what a poor content any acquaintance among these people, or the people of the world, as they nowadays go, is worth. For my part, I and my wife will keep to one another and let the world go hang, for there is nothing but falseness in it. So home to supper, and hear my wife and girl sing a little, and then to bed with much content of mind. The 6th of March. Up and with William Penn to Whitehall by coach, and by the way agreed to acquaint William Coventry with the business of Mr. Carcass, and he and I spoke to William Coventry that we might move it to the Duke of York, which I did in a very indifferent, that is, impartial manner. But vexed, I believe, Lord Brunker. Here the Duke of York did acquaint us, and the King did the like also, afterward coming in, with his resolution of altering the manner of the war this year, that is, that we shall keep what fleet we have abroad in several squadrons, so that now all is come out, but we are to keep it as close as we can, without hindering the work that is to be done in preparation to this. Great preparations there are to fortify Sheerness and the yard at Portsmouth, and forces are drawing down to both those places, and elsewhere by the seaside, so that we have some fear of an invasion, and the Duke of York himself did declare his expectation of the enemy's blocking us up here in the river, and therefore directed that we should send away all the ships that we have to fit out, hence. Sir William Penn told me, going with me this morning to Whitehall, that for certain the Duke of Buckingham is brought into the Tower, and that he hath had an hour's private conference with the King before he was sent thither. To Westminster Hall. There bought some news books, and, as everywhere else, here everybody complain of the dearness of coals, being at £4 per children. The weather, too, being become most bitter cold, the King saying today that it was the coldest day he ever knew in England. Thence by coach to my Lord Crewe's, where very welcome. Here I find they are in doubt where the Duke of Buckingham is, which makes me mightily reflect on the uncertainty of all history, when in a business of this moment and of the day's growth we cannot tell the truth. Here dined my old acquaintance Mr. Burfitt, that was my Lord Sandwich's chaplain, and my Lady Wright and Dr. Borman, who is preacher at St. Giles in the Fields, who after dinner did give my lord an account of 2 Papists, women, lately converted, whereof one wrote her recantation, which he showed under her own hand, mighty well drawn, so as my lord desired a copy of it, after he had satisfied himself from the doctor that to his knowledge she was not a woman under any necessity. Thence by coach home and stayed a very little, and then down by water to Redriff, and walked to Bagwell's, where La Mujer was dentro, said would not have me demore there, pasque Mistress Batters and one of my anquilas, I believe Jane, for she was gone abroad today, was in the town and coming thither. So I away presently, esteeming it a great escape. So to the yard and spoke a word or two, and then by water home, wondrous cold and reading a ridiculous ballad made in praise of the Duke of Albemarle, to the tune of St. George, the tune being printed too. And I observe that people have some great encouragement to make ballads of him of this kind. There are so many that hereafter will sound like Guy of Warwick. Then abroad with my wife, leaving her at the change while I to Sir Hugh Cholmondeley's, a pretty house, and a fine, worthy, well-disposed gentleman he is. He and I to Sir Philip Warwick's about money for Tangier, but to little purpose. Hugh Cholmondeley tells me, among other things, that he hears of little hopes of a peace, their demands being so high as we shall never grant, and could tell me that we shall keep no fleet abroad this year but only squadrons, and among other things that my Lord Bellasis, he believes, will lose his command of Tangier by his corrupt, covetous ways of endeavouring to sell his command, which I am glad, for he is a man of no worth in the world but compliment. So to the change, and there bought 32 shillings worth of things for Mistress Nip, my valentine, which is pretty, to see how my wife is come to condition with me, that whatever I do give to anybody else, I shall give her as much, which I am not much displeased with. So home and to the office, and Sir William Batten, to tell him what I had done today about Carcass's business, and God forgive me, I am not without design to give a blow to Sir William Batten by it. So home, where Mr. Batalier supped with us, and talked away the evening pretty late, and so he gone, and we to bed. The 7th of March. Up into the office, my head full of Carcass's business, then hearing that Nip is at my house, I home, and it was about a ticket for a friend of hers. I do love the humour of the jade very well. So to the office again, not being able to stay, and there about noon my Lord Brunker did begin to talk of Carcass's business. Only Commissioner Pett, my lord, and I there, and it was pretty to see how Pett hugged the occasion of having anything against Sir William Batten, which I'm not much troubled at, I confess, for I love him not neither, though I did really endeavour to quash it all I could, because I would prevent their malice taking effect. My lord, I see, is fully resolved to vindicate Carcass, though to the undoing William Batten, but I believe he will find himself in a mistake, and do himself no good, and that I shall be glad of. For though I love the treason, I hate the traitor. But he is vexed at my moving it to the Duke of York yesterday, which I answered well, so as I think he could not answer. But, Lord, it is pretty to see how Pett hugs this business, and how he favours my Lord Brunker, who, to my knowledge, hates him, and hath said more to his disadvantage in my presence to the King and Duke of York than any man in England. And so let them thrive one with another by cheating one another, for that is all I observe among them. Thence home late, and find my wife hath dined, and she and Mistress Hewers going to a play. Here was Creed, and he and I to Devonshire House to a burial of a kinsman of Sir Robert Viner's, and there I received a ring. And so away presently to Creed, who stayed for me at an alehouse hard by, and thence to Duke's playhouse, where he parted, and I in, and find my wife and Mistress Hewers, and sat by them and saw The English Princess, or Richard the Third, a most sad, melancholy play, and pretty good, but nothing eminent in it as some tragedies are. Only little Miss Davis did dance a jig after the end of the play, and there telling the next day's play, so that it came in by force only to please the company, to see her dance in boys' clothes. And the truth is, there is no comparison between Nell's dancing the other day at the King's House, in boys' clothes, and this being infinitely beyond the other. Here was Mistress Clark and Pierce, to whom one word only of, "How do you?" and so away home. Mistress Hewers with us, and I to the office, and so to William Batten's, and there talked privately with him and William Penn, about business of Carcass against tomorrow, wherein I think I did give them proof enough of my ability as well as friendship to William Batten, and the honour of the office, in my sense of this rogue's business. So back to finish my office business, and then home to supper and to bed. This day Commissioner Taylor came to me for advice, and would force me to take 10 pieces in gold of him, which I had no mind to, he being become one of our number at the board. This day was reckoned by all people the coldest day that ever was remembered in England, and God knows coals at a very great price. The 8th of March. Up unto the Old Swan, where drink at Mitchell's, but not seeing her whom I love, I by water to Whitehall, and there acquainted Sir George Carteret betimes what I had to say this day before the Duke of York in the business of carcass, which he likes well of, being a great enemy to him. And then, I being too early here to go to Sir William Coventry's chamber, having nothing to say to him, and being able to give him but a bad account of the business of the office, which is a shame to me, and that which I shall rue if I do not recover, to the Exchequer about getting a certificate of Mr. Lanyon's entered at Sir Robert Long's office. And strange it is to see what horrid delays there are at this day in the business of money, there being nothing yet come from my Lord Treasurer to set that business of money in action, since the Parliament broke off, notwithstanding the greatness and number of the King's occasions for it. So to the Swan, and there have 3 or 4 besados of the little Anquilla there, and so to Westminster Hall, where I saw Mr. Martin, the purser, come through with a picture in his hand, which he had bought, and observed how all the people of the hall did fleer and laugh upon him, crying, "There is plenty grown up on a sudden." And the truth is, I was a little troubled that my favour should fall on so vain a fellow as he, and the more because methought the people do gaze upon me as the man that had raised him, and as if they guessed whence my kindness to him springs. So thence to Whitehall, where I find all met at the Duke of York's chamber. And by and by the Duke of York comes, and Carcass is called in, and I read the depositions, and his answers, and he added with great confidence and good words, even almost to persuasion, what to say. And my Lord Brunker, like a very silly solicitor, argued against me and us all for him, and being asked first by the Duke of York his opinion, did give it for his being excused. I next did answer the contrary very plainly, and had in this dispute which vexed and will never be forgot by my Lord, many occasions of speaking severely, and did, against his bad practices. Commissioner Pett, like a fawning rogue, sided with my Lord Brunker, but to no purpose, and William Penn, like a cunning rogue, spoke mighty indifferently, and said nothing in all the fray, like a knave as he is. But William Batten spoke home, and did come off himself by the Duke's kindness very well. And then Sir George Carteret and Sir William Coventry, and the Duke of York himself, flatly, as I said. And so he was declared unfit to continue in, and therefore to be presently discharged the office, which, among other good effects, I hope will make my Lord Brunker not altogether so high, when he shall consider he hath been such a public foil as this is. So home, with William Batten, William Penn, by coach, and there met at the office, and my Lord Brunker presently after us, and there did give order to Mr. Stevens, for securing the tickets in Carcass's hands, which my Lord, against his will, could not refuse to sign. And then home to dinner, and so away with my wife by coach, she to Mistress Pierce's, and I to my Lord Bellis's, and with him to Lord Treasurer's, where, by agreement, we met with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, and there sat and talked all the afternoon almost about one thing or other, expecting Sir Philip Warwick's coming. But he came not, so we away toward night. Sir Hugh Cholmondeley and I to the Temple, and there parted, telling me of my Lord Bellis's want of generosity, and that he will certainly be turned out of his government, and he thinks himself stands fair for it. So home, and there find, as I expected, Mistress Pierce and Mr. Batalier. He went for Mistress Jones, but no Mistress Nip came, which vexed me, nor any other company. So with one fiddler we danced away the evening, but I was not well contented with the littleness of the room, and my wife's want of preparing things ready as they should be for supper and bed. So not very merry, though very well pleased. So after supper to bed, my wife and Mistress Pierce and her boy James and I. Yesterday I begun to make this mark, tick, stand instead of 3 pricks, which therefore I must observe everywhere, it being a mark more easy to make. The 9th of March. Up into the office where sat all the morning busy, at noon home to dinner where Mistress Pierce did continue with us, and her boy, who I still find every day more and more witty beyond his age, and did dine with us, and by comes in her husband, and a brother-in-law of his, a parson, one of the tallest, biggest men that ever I saw in my life. So to the office, where a meeting extraordinary about settling the number and wages of my Lord Brunker's clerks, for his new work upon the treasurer's accounts. But this did put us upon running into the business of yesterday about Carcass, wherein I perceive he is most dissatisfied with me, and I am not sorry for it, having all the world but him of my side therein, for it will let him know another time that he is not to expect our submitting to him in everything, as I think he did heretofore expect. He did speak many severe words to me, and I returned as many to him, so that I do think there cannot, for a great while, be any right peace between us. And I care not a fart for it. But, however, I must look about me and mind my business, for I perceive by his threats and inquiries he is and will endeavour to find out something against me or mine. Breaking up here somewhat brokenly, I home and carried Mistress Pierce and wife to the New Exchange, and there did give her and myself a pair of gloves, and then set her down at home. And so back again straight home, and there to do business. And then to Sir William Batten, where William Penn and others, and Mighty Mary. Only I have got a great cold, and the scolding this day at the office with my Lord Brunker hath made it worse, that I am not able to speak. But, Lord, to see how kind Sir William Batten and his lady are to me upon this business of my standing by William Batten against Carcass, and I am glad of it. Captain Cock, who was here tonight, did tell us that he is certain that yesterday a proclamation was voted at the council touching the proclaiming of my Lord Duke of Buckingham a traitor, and that it will be out on Monday. So home late and drank some buttered ale, and so to bed and to sleep. This cold did most certainly come by my staying a little too long bare-legged yesterday morning when I rose while I looked out fresh socks and thread stockings. Yesterday's having in the night, lying near the window, being covered with snow within the window, which made me I durst not put them on. The 10th of March, Lord's Day. Having my cold still grown more upon me, so as I am not able to speak, I lay in bed till noon, and then up and to my chamber with a good fire, and there spent an hour on Morley's Introduction to Music, a very good but immethodical book. Then to dinner, my wife and I, and then I, all the afternoon, alone in my chamber, preparing a letter for Commissioner Taylor to the City, about getting his accounts for the Loyal London, by him built for them, stated and discharged, they owing him still above £4,000. Towards the evening comes Mr. Spong, to see me, whose discourse about several things I proposed to him was very good, better than I have had with anybody a good while. He gone, I to my business again, and anon comes my Lady Penn and her son-in-law and daughter, and there we talked all the evening away, and then to supper. And after supper comes Sir William Penn, and there we talked together, and then broke up, and so to bed. He tells me that our Mr. Turner hath seen the proclamation against the Duke of Buckingham, and that therefore it is true what we heard last night. Yesterday and today I've been troubled with a hoarseness through cold that I could not almost speak. The 11th of March. Up with my cold still upon me and hoarseness, but I was forced to rise into the office where all the morning busy, and among other things Sir William Warren came to me, to whom of late I have been very strange, partly from my indifference now, more than heretofore, to get money, but most from my finding that he has become great with my Lord Brunker, and so I dare not trust him as I used to do, for I will not be inward with him that is open to another. By and by comes Sir Hugh Cholmondeley to me about Tangier business, and then talking of news he tells me how yesterday the King did publicly talk of the King of France's dealing with all the princes of Christendom. To the States of Holland, he hath advised them on good grounds to refuse to treat with us at The Hague, because of having opportunity of spies by reason of our interest in the House of Orange. And then, it being a town in one particular province, it would not be fit to have it but in a town wherein the provinces have equal interest, as at Maastricht and other places named. That he advises them to offer no terms, nor accept of any, without his privity and consent according to agreement, and tells them, if not so, he hath in his power to be even with them, the King of England being come to offer him any terms he pleases, and that my Lord St. Albans is now at Paris, plenipotentiary, to make what peace he pleases. And so he can make it and exclude them, the Dutch, if he sees fit. A copy of this letter of the King of France's, the Spanish ambassador here gets, and comes and tells all to our king, which our king denies, and says the King of France only uses his power of saying anything. At the same time the King of France writes to the Emperor that he is resolved to do all things to express affection to the Emperor, having it now in his power to make what peace he pleases between the King of England and him and the States of the United Provinces, and therefore that he would not have him to concern himself in a friendship with us, and assures him that on that regard he will not offer anything to his disturbance in his interest in Flanders or elsewhere. He writes at the same time to Spain to tell him that he wonders to hear of a league almost ended between the Crown of Spain and England by my Lord Sandwich, and all without his privity, while he was making a peace upon what terms he pleased with England. That he is a great lover of the Crown of Spain, and would take the King and his affairs, during his minority, into his protection, nor would offer to set his foot in Flanders or anywhere else to disturb him, and therefore would not have him to trouble himself to make peace with anybody, only he hath a desire to offer an exchange, which he thinks may be of moment to both sides. That is, he will instate the King of Spain in the Kingdom of Portugal, and he and the Dutch will put him into possession of Lisbon, and that being done, he may have Flanders. And this, they say, doth mightily take in Spain, which is sensible of the fruitless expense Flanders, so far off, gives them, and how much better it would be for them to be masters of Portugal. And the King of France offers for security herein, that the King of England shall be bond for him, and that he will counter-secure the King of England with Amsterdam. And it seems hath assured our king that if he will make a league with him, he will make a peace exclusive to the Hollander. These things are almost romantic, but yet true, as Sir Hugh Cholmondeley tells me the king himself did relate it all yesterday, and it seems as if the King of France did think other princes fit for nothing but to make sport for him. But simple princes they are that are forced to suffer this from him. So at noon with Sir William Penn, by coach to the Sun in Leadenhall Street, where Sir Richard Ford, Sir William Batten, and Commissioner Taylor, whose feast it was, and we dined and had a very good dinner. Among other discourses, Sir Richard Ford did tell me that he doth verily believe that the city will, in few years, be built again in all the greatest streets, and answered the objections I did give to it. Here we had the proclamation this day come out against the Duke of Buckingham, commanding him to come in to one of the secretaries, or to the lieutenant of the Tower. A silly, vain man to bring himself to this. And there be many hard circumstances in the proclamation of the causes of this proceeding of the king's, which speak great displeasure of the king's and crimes of his. Then to discourse of the business of the day, that is to say, Commissioner Taylor's accounts for his ship he built, the Loyal London, and it is pretty to see how dully this old fellow makes his demands. And yet plaguey wise sayings will come from the man sometimes. And also, how Sir Richard Ford and William Batten did with seeming violence advise him what to do, and how to come prepared to answer objections to the Common Council. Thence away to the office, where, late busy, and then home to supper, mightily pleased with my wife's trill, and so to bed. This night Mr. Carcass did come to me again to desire favour, and that I would mediate that he might be restored, but I did give him no kind answer at all, but was very angry, and I confess a good deal of it from my Lord Brunker's simplicity and passion. The 12th of March. Up into the office, where all the morning, and my Lord Brunker, mighty quiet and no words all day, which I wonder at, expecting that he would have fallen again upon the business of carcass, and the more for that here happened that Perkins, who was the greatest witness of all against him, was brought in by Sir William Batten, to prove that he did really belong to the prince, but being examined, was found rather a fool than anything, as not being able to give any account when he came in, nor when he came out of her, more than that he was taken by the Dutch in her, but did agree in earnest to Sir William Penn saying that she lay up all the winter before at Lambeth. This, I confess, did make me begin to doubt the truth of his evidence, but not to doubt the faults of Carcass, for he was condemned by many other better evidences than his, besides the whole world's report. At noon, home, and there find Mr. Goodgroom, whose teaching of my wife, only by singing over and over again to her, and letting her sing with him, not by herself, to correct her faults, I do not like at all, but was angry at it, but have this content that I do think she will come to sing pretty well, and to trill in time, which pleases me well. He dined with us, and then to the office, where we had a silly meeting to little purpose, and then broke up, and I to my office, and busy late to good purpose, and so home to supper and to bed. This day a poor seaman, almost starved for want of food, lay in our yard a-dying. I sent him half a crown, and we ordered his ticket to be paid. The 13th of March. Up and with William Batten to the Duke of York to our usual attendance, where I did fear my Lord Brunker might move something in revenge that might trouble me, but he did not, but contrarily had the content to hear Sir George Carteret fall foul on him in the Duke of York's bedchamber for his directing people with tickets and petitions to him, bidding him mind his controller's place and not his, for if he did he should be too hard for him, and other high words which I was glad of. Having done our usual business with the Duke of York, I away, and meeting Mr. Dennis Gordon in the presence chamber, he and I to talk, and among other things he tells me, and I do find everywhere else also, that our masters do begin not to like of their counsels in fitting out no fleet, but only squadrons, and are finding out excuses for it, and among others he tells me a privy councillor did tell him that it was said in council that a fleet could not be set out this year for want of victuals, which gives him, and me, a great alarm, but me especially, for had it been so, I ought to have represented it. And therefore it puts me in policy presently to prepare myself to answer this objection, if ever it should come about, by drawing up a state of the victuals' stores, which I will presently do. So to Westminster Hall, and there stayed and talked, and then to Sir George Carteret's to dinner, where I dined with the ladies, he not at home, and very well used I am among them, so that I am heartily ashamed that my wife hath not been there to see them, but she shall very speedily. So home by water, and stopped into Mitchell's, and there did besar my Betty, que igrotat a little. At home find Mr. Holyard, and made him eat a bit of victuals. Here I find Mr. Greeting, who teaches my wife on the flageolet, and I think she will come to something on it. Mr. Holyard advises me to have my father come up to town, for he doubts else in the country he will never find ease, for, poor man, his grief is now grown so great upon him that he is never at ease. So I will have him up at Easter. By and by coach, set down Mr. Holyard near his house in Hatton Garden, and myself to Lord Treasurer's, and sent my wife to the New Exchange. I stayed not here but to Westminster Hall, and thence to Martin's, where he and she both within, and with them the little widow that was once there with her, when I was there, that dissembled so well to be grieved at, hearing a tune that her late husband liked. But there being so much company, I had no pleasure here, and so away to the hall again, and there met Doll Lane coming out, and, per contract, did hacer bargain para andar to the cabaretto divin called the Rose. And Ibi I stayed 2 hours, said she did not venir, lequel troubled me, and so away by coach and took up my wife and away home. And so to Sir William Batten's, where I am told that it is intended by Mr. Carcass to pray me to be godfather with Lord Brunker tomorrow to his child, which I suppose they tell me in mirth, but if he should ask me, I know not whether I should refuse it or no. Late at my office, preparing a speech against tomorrow morning, before the king at my Lord Treasurer's, and the truth is, it run in my head all night. So home to supper and to bed. The Duke of Buckingham is concluded gone oversea, and it is thought to France. The 14th of March. Up and with William Batten and William Penn to my Lord Treasurer's, where we met with my Lord Brunker an hour before the King came, and had time to talk a little of our business. Then came much company, among others Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, who tells me that undoubtedly my Lord Bellasis will go no more as governor to Tangier, and that he doth put in fare for it, and believes he shall have it, and proposes how it may conduce to his account and mine in the business of money. Here we fell into talk with Sir Stephen Fox, and among other things, of the Spanish manner of walking when three are together, and showed me how, which was pretty, to prevent differences. By and by comes the King and Duke of York, and presently the officers of the ordnance were called, my Lord Berkeley, Sir John Duncombe, and Mr. Chichley. Then we, my Lord Brunker, William Batten, William Penn, and myself, where we find only the King and Duke of York and my Lord Treasurer and Sir George Carteret, where I only did speak laying down the state of our wants, which the King and Duke of York seemed very well pleased with, and we did get what we asked, £500,000, assigned upon the 11 months' tax. But that is not so much ready money, or what will raise £40,000 per week, which we desired and the business will want. Yet are we fain to come away answered, when God knows it will undo the King's business to have matters of this moment put off in this manner. The King did prevent my offering anything by and by as treasurer for Tangier, telling me that he had ordered us £30,000 on the same tax, but that is not what we would have to bring our payments to come within a year. So we gone out, in went others, viz. One after another, Sir Stephen Fox for the army, Captain Cock for sick and wounded, Mr. Ashburnham for the household. Thence William Batten, William Penn, and I back again. I mightily pleased with what I had said and done, and the success thereof. But it being a fine clear day, I did, en gaieté de corps, propose going to Bow for air's sake, and dine there, which they embraced. And so William Batten and I, setting William Penn down at Mark Lane End, straight to Bow to the Queen's Head, and there bespoke our dinner, carrying meat with us from London. And anon comes William Penn with my wife and Lady Batten, and then Mr. Lowther with his mother and wife. While William Batten and I were alone, we had much friendly discourse, though I will never trust him far. But we do propose the getting the Flying Greyhound, our privateer, to us, and William Penn at the end of the year when we call her home, by begging her of the King, and I do not think we shall be denied her. They being come, we to oysters, and so to talk, very pleasant I was all day, and anon to dinner, and I made very good company. Here, till the evening, so as it was dark almost before we got home, back again in the same method I think we went, and spent the night talking at Sir William Batten's. Only a little at my office to look over the victualler's contract, and draw up some arguments for him to plead for his charges, in transportation of goods beyond the ports, which the letter of one article in his contract doth lay upon him. This done, I home to supper and to bed, troubled a little at my fear that my Lord Brunker should tell Sir William Coventry of our neglecting the office this afternoon, which was intended, to look after our pleasures. But nothing will fall upon me alone about this. The 15th of March. Up and pleased at Tom's teaching of Barker something to sing a third part to a song, which will please me mightily. So I to the office all the morning and at noon to the change, where I do hear that letters this day come to court do tell us that we are likely not to agree, the Dutch demanding high terms, and the King of France the like, in a most braving manner. The merchants do give themselves over for lost, no man knowing what to do, whether to sell or buy, not knowing whether peace or war to expect. And I am told that could that be now known, a man might get £20,000 in a week's time, by buying up of goods in case there should be war. Thence home, and dined well, and then with my wife set her at Unthanks, and I to Sir George Carteret, where talked with the ladies a while, and my Lady Carteret talks nothing but sorrow and afflictions coming on us, and indeed I do fear the same. So away, and met Dr. Fuller, Bishop of Limerick, and walked an hour with him in the court, talking of news only, and he doth think that matters will be bad with us. Then to Westminster Hall, and then spent an hour or two walking up and down, thinking, para aver got out Doll Lane, sed yo no could do it, having no opportunity de hacerle. Ainsi lost the todo afternoon, and so away, and called my wife, and home, where a little at the office, and then home to my closet to enter my journals, and so to supper and to bed. This noon came little Miss Tooker, who is grown a little woman. Ego had l'opportunity para besar her, and tocarla abajo con my hand. She is pretty still, but had no mind to be vido, being not abelado as ella would be. My wife did tell me the other day that she heard she had had the gran pecho, but I hope no such thing. I sum certain that I should have been glad para haber tempo and lugar to have hecho algo con her. This morning I was called up by Sir John Winter, poor man, come in his sedan from the other end of the town before I was up, and merely about the king's business, which is a worthy thing of him, and I believe him to be a worthy good man, and I will do him the right to tell the Duke of York of it, who did speak well of him the other day. It is about helping the king in the business of bringing down his timber to the seaside in the Forest of Dean. The 16th of March. Up and to the office, where all the morning, at noon home to dinner, and then to the office again in the afternoon, and there all day, very busy till night. And then, having done much business, home to supper, and so to bed. This afternoon came home Sir John Minnis, who hath been down, but to little purpose, to pay the ships below at the Nore. This evening, having done my letters, I did write out the heads of what I had prepared to speak to the king the other day at my Lord Treasurer's, which I do think convenient to keep by me for future use. The weather is now grown warm again after much cold weather, and it is observable that within these 8 days I did see smoke remaining, coming out of some cellars, from the late great fire, now above 6 months since. There was this day at the office, as he is most days, Sir William Warren, against whom I did manifestly plead, and heartily too, God forgive me, but the reason is because I do find that he doth now wholly rely almost upon my Lord Brunker, though I confess I have no greater ground of my leaving him than the confidence which I perceive he hath got in my Lord Brunker, whose seeming favours only do obtain of him as much compensation, I believe, for he doth know well the way of using his bounties, as mine more real. Besides, my Lord and I being become antagonists, I do not think it safe for me to trust myself in the hands of one whom I know to be a knave, and using all means to become gracious there. The 17th of March, Lord's Day. Up betimes with my wife, and by coach with Sir William Penn and Sir Thomas Allen, to Whitehall. There my wife and I, the first time that ever we went to my Lady Jemima's chamber, at Sir Edward Carteret's lodgings. I confess I have been much to blame and much ashamed of our not visiting her sooner, but better now than never. Here we took her before she was up, which I was sorry for, so only saw her and away to chapel, leaving further visit till after sermon. I put my wife into the pew below in the chapel, but it was pretty to see myself being but in a plain band, and every way else ordinary, how the verger took me for her man, I think, and I was fain to tell him she was a kinswoman of my Lord Sandwich's, he saying that none under knight baronet's ladies are to go into that pew. So she being there, I to the Duke of York's lodging, where in his dressing chamber he talking of his journey tomorrow or next day to Harwich, to prepare some fortifications there, so that we are wholly upon the defensive part this year, only we have some expectations that we may, by our squadrons, annoy them in their trade by the north of Scotland and to the westward. Here Sir William Penn did show the Duke of York a letter of Hogg's, about a prize he drove in within the Sound at Plymouth, where the Vice-Admiral claims her. Sir William Penn would have me to speak to the letter, which I did, and I think without any offence, but afterwards I was sorry for it, and Sir William Penn did plainly say that he had no mind to speak to the Duke of York about it, so that he put me upon it. But it shall be the last time I will do such another thing, though I think no manner of hurt done by it to me at all. That done, I to walk in the park, where to the Queen's Chapel, and there heard a friar preach, with his cord about his middle, in Portuguese, something I could understand, showing that God did respect the meek and humble as well as the high and rich. He was full of action, but very decent and good, I thought, and his manner of delivery very good. I went back to Whitehall and there up to the closet and spoke with several people till sermon was ended, which was preached by the Bishop of Hereford. An old good man that they say made an excellent sermon. He was by birth a Catholic and a great gallant, having £1,500 per annum patrimony, and is a knight baronet, was turned from his persuasion by the late Archbishop Laud. He and the Bishop of Exeter, Dr. Ward, are the two bishops that the King doth say he cannot have bad sermons from. Here I met with Sir Hugh Cholmondeley, who tells me that undoubtedly my Lord Bellasis doth go no more to Tangier, and that he doth believe he doth stand in a likely way to go governor, though he says, and showed me, a young silly lord, one Lord Allington, who hath offered a great sum of money to go, and will put hard for it, he having a fine lady and a great man would be glad to have him out of the way. After chapel, I down, and took out my wife from the pew, where she was talking with a lady whom I knew not till I was gone. It was Mistress Ashfield of Brampton, who had with much civility been, it seems, at our house to see her. I'm sorry I did not show her any more respect. With my wife to Sir George Carteret's, where we dined, and mightily made of, and most extraordinary people they are to continue friendship with, for goodness, virtue, and nobleness, and interest. After dinner he and I alone a while, and did joy ourselves in my Lord Sandwich's being out of the way all this time. He concurs that we are in a way of ruin by this being forced to keep only small squadrons out, but doth tell me that it was not choice, but only force, that we could not keep out the whole fleet. He tells me that the King is very kind to my Lord Sandwich, and did himself observe to him, Sir George Carteret, how those very people, meaning the Prince and Duke of Albemarle, are punished in the same kind as they did seek to abuse my Lord Sandwich. Thence away, and got a hackney coach and carried my wife home, and there only drank and myself back again to my Lord Treasurer's, where the King, Duke of York, and Sir George Carteret and Lord Arlington was, and none else. So I stayed not but to Whitehall, and there, meeting with nobody I would speak with, walked into the park and took two or three turns all alone, and then took coach and home, where I find Mercer, who I was glad to see, but durst not show so, my wife being displeased with her. And indeed I fear she is grown a very gossip. I to my chamber, and there fitted my arguments which I promised Mr. Gordon in his behalf in some pretences to allowance of the King. And then to supper, and so to my chamber a little again, and then to bed. Duke of Buckingham not heard of yet.